Okay, we're live. So, hey folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today we're going to talk about superhero TV, because there's a bumper crop of it here lately. And we've been paneled just a ton of gaming folks to talk about this. First off, Mr. Steve Kenson. How you doing, Steve?
Doing very well, thanks.
Thanks, appreciate you joining us. We've got Mr. Christopher McLaughlin, who also works for Green Ronin on occasion. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm the guy who hangs around the booth, and in case any, you know, like hardcore Shadowrun people that are still mad over Dunkelzon being killed, make a move for Steve. I dive in and take the shot for him.
How often does that happen?
You'd be surprised.
All right. We have got Mr. John Dunn from Milliorvia. How you doing, John?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, pleased to have you here. And Mr. Jason Tounder, a.k.a. Dr. Comics on Blogspot. How you doing, Jason?
I'm great. Hey, everyone.
Cool. And last but not least, our frequent co-host, Mr. Aid Smith of Mesozoic Press. How you doing, Aid?
Not too bad, thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us. So I will just open up and say, I haven't been watching a lot of the superhero TV. I watched about 5 episodes of Constantine and kind of went meh and stopped. I've been watching the hell out of iZombie, though, which I understand is far different from the comic book. But it's kind of replaced the scratches the itch that Buffy used to scratch for me, you know, in that strong female protagonist fighting supernatural, or in some cases just police procedural stuff. Really, the big draw is a lot of witty dialogue, and I'll put up with a lot for that. But other than that, I haven't really been watching it. So, well, Chris, you're very opinionated. What have you been watching, and what do you think?
Am I developing a rep or something?
The rep has been established long ago.
There are 2 degrees of watching. There's my awesome wife watches it, and I'm in the room, and I look up every now and again and make a smart ass comment. And for that, we've been through Constantine, we've been through Gotham, we've been through The Flash. And we also went through Powers together. That we actually sat down and watched together. We kicked that up to the second level of where I'm actually watching what's going on the screen. So that's pretty much it for us. I've seen the trailers for iZombie, and I sit there and I go like, wow, I'm so not the audience for this. That doesn't mean that it's bad. That doesn't mean that it's bad.
We've been through Constantine. We've been through Gotham.
Okay.
Flash, and we also went through Powers together. That we actually sat down and watched together. We kicked that up to the second level of where I'm actually watching what's going on the screen.
Was there a glitch in the Matrix? Didn't Chris just say that?
Yes. Power of the universe.
That's the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Wow, I am so not the audience for this.
That doesn't mean it's bad.
We've been through Constantine.
Whoever he is, he won't shut up.
Chris, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, that was weird.
Wishing that other guy would shut up.
all right. So Constantine you didn't care for, iZombie you didn't care for?
Constantine, the things I love about that character will never be on a network TV show. So there was always going to be a very low ceiling about how much I could actually appreciate that show. And again, iZombie, it may be a fabulous show. It took me about 10 seconds to realize, like, I'm so not the audience for this.
Chris? Yeah, I was really interested to hear your thoughts on Flash, though. I mean, you're kind of the Flash go-to guy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's very flattering.
It's not a talking telepathic gorilla. I mean, who would have thought?
Well, I love everything about that show except The Flash, and it's so tragic because every time the 40-pound Flash whose ass I could kick shows up, the show just loses it for me. At best, I can say you got your Spider-Man in my Flash.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I love how well everything else has translated. I love how this is accessible and yet really open to geeks as well. And certainly they're blatantly trying to steal my heart with the Jay Garrick helmet, you know, and Grodd showing up on a TV show. But every time that 40-pound guy in his gimp suit runs out, I just like, no, I can't get into this.
Okay, so by they just miscast the lead and you just can't buy the
Yeah, to me the real Flash is the real Flash on that show is in prison. That's the guy whose adventures I want to see.
Right. Fair enough.
But other people seem to enjoy it, and God bless them. Hey, that's great. You know, it's just I don't like seeing Spider-Man with Batman's origin being palmed off as the Flash.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, from the beginning of the series, I got the impression that they were kind of going for a Spider-Man angle, the young scientist kid that's missing his parents. But I'm not a Flash expert, you know, so it's just another TV series to me.
Well, I've loved three different Flashes, and I don't see any of them on that show, and it makes me sad because everything else on it is pretty darn near perfect.
Steve, you're quite a Flash fan too, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually enjoy Grant Gustin's Flash a lot, but you know, to each their own. You know, as far as that, I find him charming, and you know, DC is or the show certainly is obviously going for a you know a much younger you know sort of year one approach to the character. I think that we see hints. In his interactions, especially with the Reverse Flash, of the sort of more mature character he's going to become, but you know he's not that yet. You know he's not the 30-something, you know, established hero who's been a hero for 10-plus years. He's a 20-something kid who just got his superpowers last week. And, you know, is still learning to use them in a lot of ways. So, you know, I, in spite of the fact that he is very young, and, you know, the notion of characters like The Flash being younger than me is creepy. in spite of that, I find the character very charming.
Every day I wake up, look in the mirror, and go, who is this husky middle-aged man? What's he done with the vibrant 20-year-old?
Hey, I'm just glad that Doctor Who is older than me, finally.
Doctor Who is damn young. Well, oh, wait, except for the latest guy. He's in his 50s, right?
We're saved by Capaldi, yeah.
Yeah, Capaldi, yeah. Why does Wally West get no love? Why does everybody always want to be Barry Allen on the TV show?
Well, the funny thing is that the current show actually partakes a lot of Wally's mythos and a lot of Mark Waid's sort of style of writing Wally because Barry's character on the show is so young. He's much more Wally's contemporary as the Flash than Barry's in a lot of ways. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, sort of mixing and matching of the character, you know. I mean, you can see that in the fact that Barry, you know, dates Linda Park on the show.
You know, it's funny you say that because one of the things that I respectfully disagree on is I just don't see any of Wally in this guy other than the fact that he's young. You know, Wally started out as young, but to me, Wally, in those early issues when he's being written by Mike Baron, was believably young. He was a fuck-up. I mean, that was the whole thing about the character was, for the first 10 issues, he's a greedy, bitter guy who is at very extreme risk of fumbling Barry's legacy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and getting to see him grow up but always grappling with Barry's legacy, that's a character I could relate to. That's a character I could get behind. So, yeah, you know, other than just being young, I just, frankly, honestly, just don't see a lot of Wally in there.
I disagree. I mean, I think that you're seeing. I mean, you're obviously not going to see the big defining thing about Wally was he was always defined by the legacy.
Yeah,
it was always that. You know, I mean, even when they finally made Wally his own character, you know, it was still always the legacy. And Barry doesn't have that on the show because there isn't, you know, there's right. No continuity to fall back on, you know. But I think that there's still a lot of Barry as, the sense that he's a kid and he doesn't know a lot yet and he's still learning a lot and he still screws up a lot, you know. But
I think a lot of it really shines when he's working with Wells and trying to explore his abilities. I think that's mm-hmm. really reminiscent of those early issues when Wally took on the mantle.
Yeah, I agree.
So, what do you guys think of Adam on that show?
I'm not a big fan of the Adam in the DC TV universe, I have to say.
Is he too goofy? Too much?
I think some of the potential we saw in the trailer for Heroes of Tomorrow has a little more promise than anything that we've seen.
Shrinks.
Yeah.
Step in the right direction. You know, but I don't know. The Adam, and maybe it's to me, I've always been a weird fan of the shrinking characters. you know, and I know it's kind of a lame power, but nonetheless, I look at you know, the Adam, who I have no problem with the portrayal of the character. I love that he's goofy, and he's geeky, you know, all that stuff. But it's again, you get that sense. You compare Adam on Arrow and Flash versus the trailers for Ant-Man, and you say, okay, here's DC basically doing all they can to apologize for the fact that this guy's power is going to be shrinking, and try and make him into, you know, sort of a cut-rate Iron Man character. And you have, you know, the Ant-Man concept that just pretty much embraces the whole concept and runs with it. It's just like, yeah, he shrinks, and he's also, when he's tiny, he's super tough. You know, and I don't see any reason why the Adam couldn't have been that character on the show. I don't understand the reason for the direction they took the character in.
Now, I thought part of it, and I may have misrecall a rumor here, was that originally they wanted to use Ted Kord's Blue Beetle, and that they used Palmer instead. So I think the character's kind of an amalgam of those two, and that may be part of the oddity.
Yeah, I heard something similar, like they didn't have the film rights to Blue Beetle or something like that.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, and they did drop hints about Kord technology is existing in the first season of Arrow. So it might have been they were building to that, and then it just didn't work out. But, you know, again, if you're going to change the character and you're going to use the Atom, why not just go and use him? But I don't know.
So, Gotham, who's been watching it? Is it any good?
I watched the first about half a dozen episodes. I really liked it, and then when it went on a break, I fell behind on it. But I know that the show gets a lot of heat from fans who find it kind of ridiculous. But coming to it as a person who kind of didn't really have any horses in the race, I found parts of it enjoyable. I thought the Penguin, of course, had the great story arc in the show. Any series that can make me find the Penguin interesting
has to have something going for it.
Yeah. And I love Jada Pinkett Smith, but everybody must have known that her writing was on the wall from the very first episode because she's surrounded by legacy characters, none of which can die, and she's not the only one that's not in the comics, so she's going to get pasted by the end of the first season.
Is it basically the adventures of Bruce Wayne, Boy Detective?
Well, Bruce Wayne is in it, but he's quite young. It's really focusing on Gordon.
Gordon's story.
Yeah, but what it became after the pretty rapidly was prequels to like the entire Bat universe. They've introduced a dozen supervillains from the Batman setting who are all kids or young people. And it's very odd. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, okay. It was all right. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's no Daredevil. I can't believe we're not talking about Daredevil.
I can't believe that either.
I think you're getting there.
I've actually watched Daredevil, so... Yeah, I was amazed by that.
That was a really good show.
Yeah, it really was. I Well, you know, I could talk all day about it. John, what do you think about it?
Daredevil, in truth, yeah. I've only watched the first couple of episodes. What I saw, I really enjoyed. I did want to toss one thing out there about Gotham, and that was, I really think it's a procedural series, because to me that was really the strength of that show when it ties back into that, because, you know, while that existed in the Batverse, Batman really was barely figured into it, and that to me is the strongest elements of Gotham, when you see the cops in action there tying into that. But then at that point it's not really a super show anymore.
Yeah, right.
Daredevil, what I've seen of it, I've enjoyed. I haven't had time to catch up on that as much as I would like to. I've caught the first couple, and you know, the fight scene at the end of episode 2 was amazing, and that. But I haven't gotten past it, unfortunately.
Well, you are in for a treat, because that is a show.
I'm looking forward to it.
We're going to spoil some stuff on Daredevil today. Okay. One of the really interesting things about the show is that it has capitalized on the binge-watching possibility of Netflix, where they released the whole series right away. There are many scenes in that show, which, if that show was coming out once a week for an hour, those scenes would never have made it to film. They would have been cut, because you just don't have time. As an example, there's a scene in one of the later episodes where Karen Page is talking to the old Hispanic woman who's getting kicked out of her tenement house, and they must spend 5 minutes talking to each other in Spanish with subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that scene would have been the first thing on the floor if this was a regular weekly show. But because they have, like, you know, 13 hours to do this thing, and they don't need to worry about keeping you gripped to the television every single minute, they can afford to take time. And the show is filled with these moments. And it was really gutsy, and I thought the talent was amazing. Again, you talk about characters that I had no interest in. I can't believe I like Foggy Nelson so much.
Oh, the casting for that was so good.
Ah, Foggy's hilarious. I just love him, and he's just such a great heart character, and he embodies the whole kind of neighborhood where he knows everybody, and he's got all these stories, the actor just does a phenomenal job. And the fight scene that you mentioned, John, I don't know if this is the scene I'm thinking of, but there's a scene in one of the early episodes where Matt is fighting his way into a bad guy hangout, and it's this one long shot down a hallway.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
It was one-take hallway fight.
And I guess that shot is a call-out to another similar shot from an old film, but, so amazing. Like, I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
It's actually a new film called Old Boy, but, yeah.
Old Boy is actually a remake of an original.
Oh, I see. Was the long hallway shot in the original?
I don't know, to be honest, but all I know is the remake was pretty controversial, because the original Old Boy, which I believe is Chinese, but I could be wrong, was pretty well known.
Yeah, interesting. I did feel like the show kind of made two kind of errors, one strategic and one kind of tactical. And I'm sorry that I'm getting into the weeds on this, but I've been wanting to talk about Daredevil for a month, so you're getting it all. I was really disappointed in the last episode, because suddenly Matt's in the costume, and the costume is fine. I had no problem with the costume. It's a little bit too 90s for me, but, you know, whatever. But suddenly he started posing. He was doing all this, like, I've got my sticks and I'm posing kind of stuff in his fight with the Kingpin. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You don't pose for 12 hours. We watch you on the show for 12, and you are just a dude fighting.
That's the costume.
Well, Dr. Comics, would have been better maybe if he'd taken those 12 hours and, like, maybe poured out a giant double D in gasoline so they could light it on fire later?
what do you mean?
That's true. That would have been cooler.
I'm poking a little fun at the Ben Affleck version.
Oh, that's an awful movie. Yeah, that's an awful, awful movie. It's a minor thing, but there's an old lesson that we learned from the original Superman film. Christopher Reeve talks about this in the commentary for the film. He says, look, the first thing I learned when I was auditioning for the part of Superman was, don't pose. Let the costume do all of that for you. Just act like a normal person, and the costume will do all the posing. And so this is a newbie mistake. The other thing I was disappointed in, and once again, spoilers, please turn off your podcast, that they killed Ben Urich. Because that guy, that actor was so great, and the Ben Urich part was so... Now, I get why they did it, because they had to create a cost. Karen had to have a cost for what she was doing, and I totally get that. But they admitted later that this happened. They made the film, made the show before they found out that Marvel was getting Spider-Man back. And the show creators admitted that if they had known that, they would have taken Ben Urich in a different direction. And he wouldn't have been working for some anonymous New York City newspaper. He would have been working for the Daily Bugle. And his boss would have been Robbie Robeson instead of some anonymous white dude. And he would have lived, because you would have seen him in Spider-Man pictures later on. So I get why they killed him, but that actor was so good, and he brought so much to the show, and so much credibility, and I just loved watching him. I could watch him eat coffee cake for an hour. You know, he was so good. So it was a shame that he died. Those are my only complaints with the show.
Okay, don't you think Daredevil himself is slightly over-violent?
Oh, he's incredible.
Like jabbing that blade into that guy's eye to try and get him to confess to what he was doing. It's like, I don't remember that ever being in the comics. Does it ever? Does it?
That's what my one issue with the show is, that it's a little too violent.
Yeah.
I thought Daredevil himself was a bit crazy. Yeah.
I was shocked at that scene. I was.
There was another bit as well he did. I can't for life remember what it was, but it was something equally odd. It just seemed to jar with the portrayal of Daredevil I'm familiar with anyway. So,
yeah, he absolutely was very violent, and that's a theme they're trying to play with in the show, though, that he has kind of this craving for violence that he has to try to control. It's certainly a far cry from Marvel.
Like you say, because it's Netflix, they've probably got away with it slightly more as well, rather than being on the big screen or even a regular TV series. That would never happen. So
yeah, you can go with things on Netflix. Yeah,
I expect he'll be less violent in the future, because now that he's put on the costume, I think that violence was a characteristic of his early phase when he was just a vigilante.
That's an interesting theory.
We'll see when the second season comes up. But I think that he'll be trying to act more like a superhero, now that he is dressed like one. It's interesting, because superheroes exist in this universe, and people can say to him, hey, I thought you're some kind of superhero. And that scene, it's interesting, because that scene where he's torturing that guy for information, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. If you remember, he's being told where to stab that guy by Night Nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't like that scene either, but I'm prepared to forgive it as long as it was an aberration, I guess.
So the Legends of Tomorrow trailer, have you guys seen it?
Yep.
What do you think about that? Anybody?
I think it's pretty amazing that they managed to get Rip Hunter into a TV show in live action. That was a little stunning to me.
Did they get the Doctor Who callback?
Well, yeah, I mean, TV Rip Hunter is like if the Doctor and John Constantine had a baby, basically. I mean,
well, seemed to have some Captain Jack elements there too.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think it's going to take some time to see what they're doing with these characters. I mean, I'm not familiar with White Canary.
I remember her from one issue of Birds of Prey a few years ago.
Nope.
I don't think this has any connection to that White Canary.
Apart from the name, I doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Black Canary with the name change.
Yeah, basically. So, we'll see what happens in there. I love that there were giant robots in the trailer, but I'm sure that'll be like, you know, not something we see every episode. Because, you know, budgets.
Right.
be interesting. Hey, John. Speaking of superheroes, this is the part where we artfully segue into talking about your Kickstarter.
Oh, so sure. We're currently ramping up for Kickstarter for a Savage Worlds game setting that we're calling Thin Blue Line, a Detroit police story. We're currently blogging about it at www.thinblueline.rpg.com. The basic premise of it is that all the player characters are officers in the Corktown precinct of Detroit, which is a fictional precinct, and our version of Detroit is a bit darker than the real one. Hard to believe that's possible, but really it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And Corktown is ostensibly the place where all the losers are sent to end out their careers in the worst possible way, but in reality, in the context of the game, the officers that are sent there are ones who've either expressed a psychic ability or they've had a direct confrontation with the supernatural, and Corktown's responsibility then is keeping the supernatural quiet. We're going to be setting it up so that campaigns can either just kind of cue in off a lot of different myths and legends that are kind of already built into Detroit. A lot of those are adding some additional background to it. But then we're also going to have some actual plot elements going on that Game Masters can choose to tie in there if they want to develop the campaign around that, or if they weak type episodes. Either way is going to work well.
Okay, cool. And when does that launch?
And more info there is thinblueline.rpg.com. Kickstarter should launch late June.
Okay, cool. Sounds
and
very interesting.
And we're on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you.
Can I ask why you chose such a narrow focus? Is it's an interesting design choice?
So the guy who's doing pretty much all the writing on this is Jason Marker, and he's lived all around the place, but he's in Detroit now, and he's basically doing this as his love story to the city. He's very attached to it, and he wants a chance to show its bright spots and its dark spots, and really express those in an RPG way, because that's the kind of writing he does.
Okay, cool. We'll look forward to checking that out. Are you making your own power system, or are you using the superpowered companion for Savage Worlds?
Actually, we're going to be using Savage Worlds core rules and the horror companion for most of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be developing our own arcane background, which we're just calling Arcane Background Psychic, and then using some powers coming out of the core book and more powers coming out of the setting book itself.
Okay, cool. Well, that sounds really interesting. I look forward to checking that out. I know it's been kind of an uphill fight. The Savage fans haven't embraced superpowers or superhero RPGs with both arms. I know I've had a few products for that. I like seeing other publishers getting that ring, try to build the market base there.
Part of the challenge there is that there have been a couple of different ways of going about it. I think with this second edition companion that came out about a year ago, Pinnacle may finally be getting things better on track. We'll have to see, though.
Okay, but well, best of luck with that.
John, I think the book I don't know about, the core companion, I have the superpower companion for Savage Worlds. What's the core companion?
So I may have misstated that, but there have been two different editions of the Savage Worlds Supers Companion.
Yes.
So there was one that came out a few years ago, and then there was a second edition that came out last August at the same time with the Sci-Fi Companion.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And there's some non-trivial revamps with that one.
Yeah, okay. All right. Cool, right on.
Well, cool. Well, hey, since we're talking about RPG projects, Mr. McLaughlin, you have anything you want to talk about at this point, or is everything still under wraps with you?
Well, I can plug for a little bit, but could we go back to our topic du jour for just a second? Would that be okay?
Please.
Because I had something good I wanted to throw.
That's right. Because Chris only talked about his first wave. He only talked about the shows he doesn't actually actively engage in.
Yeah. Because well, I mean, I don't want to derail the whole podcast, but I had something positive to throw out. It's okay.
What do you like?
Is that good with you, Mike? Is that okay?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
I was being quiet so you could talk.
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually think the best superhero show currently on the air, although that's maybe a generous statement for something that you have to watch through a video game system. But honestly, if you haven't checked out the Powers adaptation, honestly, I think that by a considerable margin is the best superhero show I've seen in a long, 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 long time.
I have no idea what you're talking about. What is that?
Well, it's an adaptation of a comic that Bendis did before he hooked up with Marvel, and now it's slid over to Marvel along with him. But it was pitched to me as basically CSI with superheroes, which kind of made me go, this sounds like something my wife would really be into. And in kind of introducing her to it, I realized that it's so much more than that, because it's not so much CSI as it is 70s cop show with superheroes. I mean, if you have a fondness in your heart for this, you know, slamming your gun and badge, you know, on the table after your boss tells you the commissioner is coming down on him, you know, and this is not your personal war, it's got that, which is very near and dear to my heart. But the thing that blew me away about it is, with, you know, so much superhero media, movies and TV being dedicated to showing you everything in graphic detail, Power seems to be the only show, and it may be for reasons of budget, I don't know, that actually seems to understand that some things are told better through the power of suggestion. Like, I don't want to give you too many details and spoil it for anybody who hasn't checked it out yet, but there's a scene where their master villain escapes. And he's by far the most insanely powerful and dangerous guy in that universe, and all they show is the trail of destruction that he's left as they close out their penultimate episode. And to me, just seeing the broken bodies and the absolute devastation, that to me works so much better than if this would have been handled in any other type of media, where we would have seen every single bone-crunching, please Zack Snyder stop directing movies moment of that. And I'll tell you something else. Rather than sink their money into special effects, they put it into actors. This has got people like Charlton Copley. He's the main character who, if you know Elysium, oh, God help you if you know Elysium, District 9. Let's talk District 9. That's so much better. Let's talk about District 9. He's the star. Michelle Forbes from Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek The Next Generation is in it. And Eddie Izzard. Cool. And that will either mean everything or nothing to you.
Oh, very cool.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
I didn't know he was in it. That's brilliant.
Yes, the DVD is coming out in July, which I imagine will probably make it a little more accessible to those of us that don't have the Vidya games, as my dad used to love to call them. But honestly, I think, I mean, by far and away, the best superhero related thing I've seen lately on my TV.
I also watched the first episode, and I did not realize I was watching Starsky and Hutch and Beretta, but now that you mentioned. I see it now. I was discouraged, however, because I felt like it was really dumbing down the original series. I felt like it was going for a lot of dick jokes and stuff like that, and it was oversimplifying the original series a bit too much for me. I realize that most people wouldn't have read the original series, so they didn't feel that way. But I'll look at it again. I'll look forward to the DVD.
You know, honestly, the moments between Michelle Forbes, Charlton Copley, and Eddie Izzard, I frankly don't care if a word of that isn't in the comics. It is a good thing in and of itself, just simply because it's good actors making the most of some pretty good source material.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize PlayStation had their own streaming service. That's odd.
Yes,
I want to check out the show, but there is no way I can until it comes out on DVD.
Well, there are other methods. You know, I for instance found the episodes after they fell off the back of a truck.
There was some guy at a Golden Corral parking lot who was like, "Hey, you want some streaming media? I just happened to find it over there."
he said, "I've got Powers on DVD and Still Brewed Hooch," and I took the video.
We also did not talk about Agent Carter, which I know it was only 8 episodes long, but that was a wonderful
show. Terrific show.
It got renewed, and I can't wait to watch it. The second season is going to be set in Los Angeles, and the universe is not benevolent enough to give me an Agent Carter Rocketeer crossover. But Disney does own Rocketeer.
Disney does own the Rocketeer.
And so it is technically possible.
Yeah.
Well, if you were going to revive the character, bring him in the
Marvel. Of some sort.
Well, okay. Oh, but anyway, okay, yes. Okay, my plug. Let me get to my plug now that I've plugged other people's stuff.
Please, Chris, I want to hear your plug.
Thank you. Yes, well, I'm hard at work on the next weekly thing from the great people at Green Ronin. Steve is off doing stuff, and us kids are playing with all the stuff that's left behind. Party while Steve's gone. So they're letting me do a villain a week, something I've been asking to do since 2006, and persistence does pay off. And if you have an image of, like, John Lighthouser driving a car and me in the backseat, can I do villains now? 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 You pretty much got it. Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. But, yeah, so we've got, I've sent off five of them so far. I've seen our art on the first three, and I'm really, really excited. It really seems like it's coming together nicely and quickly. So they haven't told me a date yet, but hopefully soon you'll be getting some evil from McGee every week.
Well, I'm excited about that, and I know better than to ask you about release dates on Green Ronin. So
well, I've seen art. That's always the stumbling block. I have seen art. So that makes me think this is coming sooner than later.
Can I ask about the cosmic supplement for the Freedom Universe, or is that should we just change the subject and move on?
You can back ask.
I turned in my manuscript back during Obama's first term. I'm hoping by the time that Hillary Clinton is sworn in, maybe the PDF will be out. I don't know.
Santorum just announced today.
I just picture him wearing this bucket button that says, "No, I'm not Mike Huckabee. That's the other guy."
Indeed. Well, hey, Steve, anything, any projects you'd like to talk about, or are you sworn to secrecy and everything right now?
Well, obviously the fact that I did design on the upcoming D&D adventure Out of the Abyss has been announced, but I can't say much more about that.
Is it true you get a Super Bowl type ring when you become a Wizards of the Coast freelancer?
I must have been lost in the mail, if so.
I heard you get first class air travel and they give you little bunny slippers.
If only.
So the D&D supplement's coming out sometime soon. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be September, I believe.
Okay, excellent. Can you talk about Blue Rose at all?
Yeah, Green Ronin is in the process of doing a new edition of the Blue Rose Romantic Fantasy RPG. We're going to use the adventure gaming engine from Dragon Age, the Age system that's also going to be featured in the standalone Fantasy Age book, and the Titan's Grave setting from Will Wheaton's tabletop RPG show. And so it's allowing us to use a lot of the work we've already done on the Age system in conjunction with the Blue Rose setting. And I'm in the process of reviewing some of the original material, and we're looking at advancing the setting's timeline a short number of years, adding some additional material, that sort of a thing. And we're working on a Kickstarter to go live fairly soon, so it should be a fun project. Blue Rose was one of the first projects I worked on for Green Ronin when I came on staff, so I have very fond recollections of it.
And that was back in the Holocan days of the D20 boom, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed.
That's what introduced True 20.
Yes, in fact, Blue Rose is what led to True 20, because...
Yeah. I use True 20 for Arthur Lives, so Blue Rose has a big spot in my game design career path.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask kind of a possibly sensitive question about Green Ronin?
Sure.
What made you guys decide to do a Kickstarter for this book?
Blue Rose?
Just publishing it.
Well, part of it was, honestly, to do one of the things that Kickstarter does and give us a better sense of what the market looks like for, a project like Blue Rose.
I see.
When we originally did the original edition of the game, it was, like you said, it was in the height of the D20 boom. And we did the original edition as a pre-planned, pre-book set. We only planned three books for the series, We did a core book, we did a companion book, and we did an expanded setting book, and that was it. It was three and out, and we were going to be done. And those books did well, but, you know, it's 10 years later now. The market has changed, you know, we're pairing the setting with a different, you know, although we hope still pretty popular game system. So, you know, one of the nice things about Kickstarter is it, you know, allows us the opportunity to, you know, gauge just how much interest, you know, a particular product concept has. Nice. If it does well, you know, if it does real well, then obviously it's something that we want to, you know, consider devoting some more resources to. If it does well enough to publish it, then we can certainly publish it. But, you know, it might be something that's, you know, not worth doing more than, you know, a standalone project or two.
I see.
Oh, cool, cool. Look forward to that. You know, I just want to say, we were talking about Agent Carter, just to go back to that. I was really hoping someone would do a pulpy 1940s, you know, super spy RPG after Agent Carter came out, and sadly that hasn't happened yet, so maybe you guys should get on that in your free time? That'd be great.
All right.
Because I don't really have the bandwidth to do it myself, but I want to play that game. So, Chris, you got some time for that?
I'm sorry, Bill in a Week has eaten my life temporarily.
Ah, okay, all right. Well, just think about it, so. All right, well, it's the time of the podcast where I say I have to pick up my kid from daycare, so we're wrapping
Aww.
Up. Any closing thoughts from anybody?
Thanks to John for joining us for the first time. It's great to have you here.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us, John. Everyone else, check out, make sure I get the URL right, John. It's thinbluelionrpg.com.
You got it. Thank you.
Abe, we hardly heard from you this hour. Did you have a favorite show that we forgot to talk about?
I do not watch superhero shows on TV at the moment. I refuse to watch them.
Wait.
Yeah, go on.
You had specific complaints about Daredevil.
Oh yeah, Daredevil. I watched 4 episodes, and that was, I lost interest, to be honest.
What I find funny is that Mike sends everybody a note saying, "Hey, we're going to talk about superhero television," and Abe writes back and says, "I'm in."
Yeah, of course. The thing is, I treat them as alternate universes, and I'll give them a try, and then if I don't like them, they're easy to ignore. Okay, so exactly the same as the Ultimate Universe. Meh, it's all right. Okay, but I can ignore it if I don't like it. As most people know, the best superhero TV show, of course, is Batman 66. So,
yes, yes.
You know, did you hear about the movies they're going to be making?
Yeah. Did you hear about the animated ones? Yes.
Yeah, with Adam West and Julie Newmar.
Yeah, it should be damn good. Yeah. We just had the horror channel on in the UK just showed the movie, the actual 66 movie yesterday, so that was pretty cool. So.
Sunday, you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Damn it, I was going to make
yes,
that
exactly. Yes, exactly. I love that damn line, yeah. But no, regular, Flash never did it for me. I think, to be honest, Flash suffered the problem that Smallville was before it, and Smallville was like, hey, let's do a TV series about the most powerful character in existence, but don't actually give him any reason to be powerful, or don't call him the name that he's actually known by. So that kind of just annoyed me slightly. So I'm always kind of got that chip on my shoulder thinking, this is what it's going to turn into, so... Although Supergirl does look pretty cool.
You know, we didn't mention Supergirl. What the hell is wrong with us? Yeah, the trailer for Supergirl looked amazing.
And
yeah.
That's another one that might have fallen off of that same truck as Powers.
That's true.
What, have you already downloaded episodes? What are you saying here? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more? Okay, gotcha.
We would never advocate such a thing.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Hey, since we're ostensibly a comic book discussion podcast, I just posted a link to a CBR story in the chat window. Mm-hmm. So apparently the whole point of Convergence was us bringing back the multiverse.
Right. The point of Convergence is admitting that Crisis on Infinite Earths was a huge mistake.
Yeah, basically. That's a good summary.
Pretty much.
So, Steve and Chris, you guys are big DC fanboys. Do you care at this point?
To me, it's kind of an infinite number of universes where Dan Didio can authorize people getting their arms ripped off. Because I looked at the post-convergence slate of books, and there's... I'll keep buying Flash just out of habit, but, you know, Bat Bunny and Hal Jordan, the whitest man in the history of whiteness, wearing a hoodie and pretending to be an outlaw... There's just there's not a single one of those books that I'm going to read out of anything other than just inertia.
That is not a stunning recommendation. Steve, what do you think?
You know, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, if DC uses the notion that they've got a bigger palette, you know, to tell stories, and if this is really and truly the notion is, hey, creative people, you can use any previous setting DC has ever published to tell your stories, then that has potential. You know, I mean, it could lead to some interesting and decent comics if that is, in fact, the intended purpose and that's what people end up using it for.
Sadly, I thought the exact same thing when it was called Hyper Time.
All right, I was going to say, but we've heard this song before, you know, several times, in fact. So, I don't know. I mean, be nice. You know, all I want to do is read some cool comics, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I would hope that, you know, DC abandons all interest in continuity and just throws it all to the winds, because I don't care, you know, about their continuity one bit. I just want to read some good superhero books.
Yeah. You know, I read an interview with Grant Morrison, so big grain of salt, a few years ago, and he had this idea, this Multiversity comic book, and this is back when I thought it was coming out like 5 years ago, would be a jumping off point for a bunch of web comics that would be in each different universe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just finished the last issue of Multiversity, and he does this whole big six-issue series clarifying all the 52 universes and what they all are. So now, according to this article, I guess that's all in the shitter again?
Pretty much irrelevant.
Yep.
No, that's back.
And then some.
Yeah.
52 plus.
Yes.
Effectively, yeah.
So, but the whole map that was the big selling point for the director's cut release of Multiversity Today is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, the map... Well, it reminded me of nothing so much as the Wheel of the Planes from...
D&D. I think it's a good idea. I think if there is a potential now, we may get another series of Elseworld books, which would be really cool. Even if it's just like prestige or four issue series that are kind of set during these things, that would be really cool. So.
I've been saying for many years that, you know, DC should treat everything as an Elseworld book.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Alan Moore was once very famously asked in an interview how he felt about what comic publishers labeled imaginary stories.
Yeah.
And he paused for a moment and said, aren't they all?
Yeah.
you know, I mean, you know, the whole notion of comic book, of continuity in comic book universes is honestly one of the biggest creativity killers that the publishers and creatives have ever faced.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting discussion we could have some other time, maybe. I wonder if they think there's a real market pressure to have continuity, or if it's just, you know, hidebound tradition that keeps them marching that way.
Well, it's a conflict between the fans that insist. There's, you know, there's very vocal fans who want all the continuity to make sense, and Marvel's, there's a long tradition of this. I mean, that's why Marvel would give out no prizes for stuff like this, you know, back in the 70s. So people would spot continuity errors. And fans were encouraged to value continuity.
Well, it's a gatekeeper. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you can say, I know this continuity, and this continuity, that makes me better than you because I know it all. I mean, that was a big breaking in point.
And creating that kind of fan culture was critical to Marvel's success in that time period. But then you've got the audience has shrunk so small that now you know, to bring in new audiences, we have a desire to ignore continuity, or we'll even have competing versions of the Flash at the same moment on television and film, which is going to be weird. Like, you know, I don't know why you would do that, but whatever. So you have kind of the old school and the new school competing, and I guess every corporate office decides where they want to tread that line.
Well, I think you're absolutely right to say that it's dollar-driven, but honestly, I think that if the people making the decisions look up from the comics and see a world where you can go see superheroes in 3D IMAX, you can play them, you can be those heroes in video games, or you can just play another video game, or you know, talk to people on the other side of the world instantaneously, or see any movie ever made. And if you're looking at this media situation going, aha, the problem with our $5 books that come out once a month in exchange for 18 pages of story is continuity. You kind of maybe are missing some things there. You know, a couple elephants and maybe a couple of gorillas on their backs in that room. Maybe, possibly. You know, because I mean, to me, continuity is a tool like anything else. As long as you don't overuse it, it's great. It's like violence or realism or humor or anything else. As long as you don't run it in the ground, it's just fine. I mean, to me, DC's high point was other than you know, when of course they were, you know, founding the whole genre, was that period in the 90s when, you know, books like Starman were good, were in their prime. You know, Wally West was the Flash, Kyle Rayner was Green Lantern, and these were new characters you could latch onto, but they were also about dealing with a past legacy. I mean, DC invented the superhero genre. That's their legacy. When they run away from that, they just become second or third rate Marvel.
Now,
you know, DC without at least a certain amount of continuity, to me, just doesn't work.
The implication of your argument that you skipped right past.
Sorry.
That the comic book form is basically fucked. That it's never going to be able to compete with new media.
Well, I don't think that continuity is the biggest problem that you're facing, especially when your most loyal customers value continuity to some degree or another. Now, the day when, you know, a lack of continuity brings in tons of new fans that buy comics the rest of their life, then yeah, I'll say continuity is a huge problem, and that's what's killing the comic industry. But to me, I mean, you know, just the media situation just has so many more challenges for comics, regardless of what's in them. And, you know, that's, of course, shoving aside the fact that, you know, most of DC's books are fucking terrible. Okay, but, you know, I mean,
Once again, folks, check out DC Adventures at the shelves of a game store near you, written by Chris McLaughlin.
Yes, yes. The document of the pre-Dan Didio era. Love it, love it, love it, love it.
All right, guys. I think we should have a conversation about continuity, because this is pretty interesting and lively, but unfortunately there's a small young boy staring out a window at a daycare.
Oh. Well, we don't want to be responsible for having the county sent out there. So.
Yeah, that would be bad. So, hey, everyone, thanks very much for joining. This was a great conversation.
Thanks,
and for all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time with the BAMP Podcast.
All right.
So when I hit stop podcast, I think we're all going to still be online, but if we're not, thanks to everybody for coming out.